The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Stephen Flurry reporting from the Edstone High Tower. The names keep rolling in. That's a good one coming in this morning. We are up high. It's not, I guess it's not incredibly high, but it certainly is higher than the cellar, that's for sure. And a beautiful scene. I failed to mention that yesterday during the break. Just in looking out the window, we have a nice window in the studio here, and I saw Isaac on his bike. He had a kickball wedged between his knees, and he was riding awkwardly, I guess, out to the field so he could play. And that's the kind of thing that we can enjoy now from the high tower. Below, you couldn't see anything, well, except for Sam, and that was it. That was my only view. Not good enough, Sam. Not good enough. Well, I mentioned I'd update you on the Phoenix Pack. Sorry that I didn't get to that yesterday or the day before. But the stats that I have are from the opening night, Sunday evening. 190 people turned out for the personal appearance campaign. My father, of course, spoke at the event. It's about the same size as the Houston Pack, I'm told. And I think there were about a third of the people invited, or a third of the number that were invited at Houston were invited at Phoenix, and we ended up with about the same number that attended. So a really good, another really good showing, and I think 30 people or so signed up for the follow-up Bible study. So there's more to come. And speaking of packs, we're pretty much, I think we've pretty much finalized the London pack. That'll be on October 21st and 22nd. I believe the venue is going to be down in London, somewhere near the Euston station, the train station. So whether you're coming in from not that far away or far away, hopefully it'll be convenient enough to get off at the train station and to go right to the hotel where we'll be having the event. So that's coming up after the Feast of Tabernacles toward the end of October, right here in the UK. Well, on today's show, we're going to be, well, following up really on, I think, stories we've touched on already this week, quite a bit more on the situation in South Africa. South Africa essentially legalizing the theft of property, private property. They're going in now, and not just any private property owned by white people. So they've passed this racist policy, and it's going forward, and it's getting very little attention, hardly any attention in the United States. They're too busy, again, hyperventilating over the impeachment, and we'll get to that here in just a second. Also on today's show, later on, we'll talk more about the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, the non-aggression pact that was signed on this day, August 23rd, 1939, and then it was a week later that World War II broke out. So Germany and the Soviet Union, they signed this non-aggression pact, and immediately after Germany and Russia come together, there's World War that, as I say, will be addressed or discussed coming up later on today's show. Well, just following up on the Russian collusion hoax, as my father put it back in the May issue of the Trumpet magazine, this fraud continues, and as is becoming clearer by the day, I mean, the aim here is to overturn the results of the 2016 election. As I said on yesterday's show, President Trump is the target. And so that's why you get the news cycle spinning the way that it does constantly. One day, Jim Comey's a villain. Then he's a hero. Then he's a star witness. And it's the same with Michael Cohen. One day he's a liar and a cheat. Now he's a star witness. Now he's out front. He's out front and he's represented, in case anyone hasn't noticed, he's represented by Lanny Davis, who's a longtime Clinton ally, a longtime friend and lawyer for the Clinton family. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and he's representing Michael Cohen, who basically had two choices. He could either stay with President Trump, like Manafort did, or he could join the other side. And he opted for the latter. He joined the other side. And so he's turned on the president. And now, because, as I covered yesterday, you have that so-called confession to the campaign financing violations, which they weren't even violations. They weren't even crimes. But because he's confessed, quote-unquote, that's what they're leading with. When, as I said on yesterday's program, I mean, the real danger here, the real grave danger here, the real lawlessness that's going on, and it's on multiple levels for sure, but the real lawlessness here that we should be concerned about is the abuse of power at the very top of these departments, the DOJ, the FBI, where they're abusing laws to go after a political opponent. It's all about politics. And that's why you're hearing this incessant message about impeachment. Sean Hannity on his program last night, I don't want to take credit for this, but he did a good job of putting together a 30 or 40 second montage of the media reaction to those convictions on I guess it would be Tuesday. And here's what they ran with all through the news cycle yesterday, clip six.
Given the events of today, the likelihood of impeachment, I'm not saying it's high necessarily, but it certainly went up.
Impeachment.
Impeach.
Impeachment.
Impeachment.
Impeach.
Impeachment.
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 The president is clearly guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. He should resign his office or be impeached.
Today, the Trump presidency took a giant step toward impeachment.
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 Impeachment implications are now in the air.
Impeachment.
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 If it is a crime, it certainly is an impeachable offense.
Impeach Trump.
Impeachment.
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 You get the idea. You know where they're going as we come up to the midterm elections. They may tone it down because for all we know, I mean, this might really hurt them politically. But this is the aim. This is why the investigation continues. It's approaching 500 days. No Russian collusion, no obstruction of justice, and yet it continues. And you have all of these people on the periphery. They're going down. They're taking a hit. And then the media desperately trying to implicate Donald Trump, to tie him into all of these others that are going off to jail. And of course, as part of this story, as I alluded to yesterday, I mean, this is emerging clearer and clearer as we go as well. The dual system of justice, the blatant double standard, selectively prosecuting individuals on this side, the Republican side, the Trump side, while exonerating all the others on the other side. And really what we're talking about here is a breakdown in law and order, lawlessness. You want to talk about root causes? It's really, I mean, without God's perspective here and God's solution, it would be quite depressing to just hear this every day, no matter what side you're on, the side that's hyperventilating or the other side that's sitting there watching this double standard, that's sitting there observing the fact that, well, for one guy, it's 240 years in prison. For another guy, it's a slap on the wrist. The war, as my father has written for decades now, the war against the U.S. Constitution. I mean, unless there's a supreme law in the land that applies equally to everyone, what are you left with? It's like he said back in 2009, history reveals that empires are destroyed if they fail to establish the rule of law. And so you get one side that says, oh, we're establishing the rule of law. Like that prosecutor, I played the clip yesterday, following the plea bargain. It was a plea bargain between federal prosecutors and this shady lawyer, and then right in the middle of it is the lawyer representing the shady lawyer. He's a Clinton crony. It's unbelievable. You talk about collusion. And then what comes out of the backroom deal? Well, we find out that he hasn't paid taxes all these years. And he admits that there was, in fact, a campaign finance violation. And Donald Trump told me to make it. The War Against the Constitution. My father's had a couple of articles by that title over the years. Back in 2013, April of 2013. He quotes from Paul Johnson, No Law Without Order, that excellent piece from back in 1999. But in the article, my father says, it is the same law for everyone, everywhere. Kings, emperors, high priests, the state itself are all subject to it. If exceptions are made, the rule of law begins to collapse. That was the grand lesson of antiquity. If exceptions are made, I think he's quoting there from Paul Johnson. But this is the grand lesson of antiquity. This is the history lesson that we want to take away from the rise and fall of great empires. If exceptions are made, the rule of law begins to break down. It begins to collapse. And that's what we're seeing. That's why the special investigator or the special counsel, that's why there's no credibility there. Because all these other crimes were just brushed aside. And now they're going after people, as I said yesterday, and it doesn't justify their illegal acts, not paying their taxes and the like, but they're going after people that they wouldn't have gone after were it not for the fact that they had a connection to Donald Trump. So the common denominator in all of it is Donald Trump. And here again, you talk about a flip-flop. It wasn't but just 4, 5, 6 years ago. They loved Donald Trump. He was a celebrity. He was going to their weddings. They were attending parties that he was putting on. They wanted to cozy up to him. But as soon as he became a political opponent, then he became the enemy. And now it's throw the book at him. Anything and everything that they can think of. But when you step back and look at the bigger picture here, what does it say about our society? This total breakdown of law and order. This war, this ongoing war against the Constitution. My father wrote in that 2013 piece, media and news personalities are a big part of the liberal culture, about 80% of them. The destroying of our Constitution, our constitutional republic, would not be possible without their support. All too often, they are deceived, and in turn, they have the power to deceive our citizens. They're deceived, but then look at the power that they have. You heard the montage. Look at the power over and again. This is all that people are hearing. He's going to be impeached. Impeached for what? Impeached for, I mean, we're long past the point of character mattering. Character hasn't mattered in our leaders for decades. So they're not going to impeach him for adultery or a promiscuous lifestyle. So what are the actual laws that they're going to impeach him for? Or what laws did he break? It's just impeach, impeach, impeach. And the message is going to be repeated. Well, as I say, maybe they'll tone it down some as they draw closer to the... But you can hear how excited they are. The elections are coming. And we just need a simple majority. We just need 51%. in the House for these articles of impeachment to be put forward. They're all talking about it because they're all hoping for it, desperately. That's the aim, and it's so obvious, and at the same time so shallow as well. You're not getting the truth. They themselves are deceived, but yet they have a lot of power to deceive others. We'll see. There's obviously a few people in America that see through it. But are there enough? Are there enough to keep that Republican majority? We'll see. As I said yesterday, it's going to be interesting to watch. And at the same time, it's going to be, well, it's just nice to know we don't have to meddle in the politics of this world, that we don't have to place our faith or our hope in the politics of this world. There is no hope in man. No political party is going to save the United States of America. But look at how divided we are. I've been reading a little bit on the side about the lead up to the Civil War back in the late 1850s, early 1860s, and just the division, the sharp division, and the things that they had to do when they sort of interacted with people in Kentucky or Missouri, these states that were sort of right in the middle, and you didn't really know who was on which side. And people going into restaurants or shops and having to keep quiet because they didn't want to start a fight or a big argument. There's some similarities. It's building to that. In fact, prophecy tells us it's going to be even worse. I mean, that's the bloodiest battle that America's been in. Hundreds of thousands slaughtered. And no one knew going in that it was going to carry on for years. No one knew that there'd be hundreds of thousands of casualties. The leaders on both sides thought it would be a quick war. They thought it would be over and then everything settled and we're right back to normal. We have no idea what we're getting into. The media, the politicians, the leaders, the commentators, all of those that are out there actively working to provoke hostilities, war, violence. We have no idea. Again, my father, he talks about it in the war against the Constitution. He had a program, this is back in, 2013 as well, Key of David, clip 9 here. This is the show from 2013 on Abandon the Constitution.
The Constitution itself says that it is the supreme law of the land. The supreme law of the land. Now, if you do away with the supreme law of the land, as some are saying we should do, well, what is that going to bring? Is it going to bring anarchy and chaos? And is it really dangerous to this entire land and to everybody who lives here in America? If you look at the Old Testament and our forefathers in the book of Joshua and Judges, it's all really one book, and it says there at the very end that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. He didn't have a law to look to, and everybody just made up their mind how they were going to live and what they were going to do, and just after that, Israel was conquered. So what kind of leadership can you possibly have if you don't have some law and somebody there to implement the law?
That's my father from 2013 talking about what happens when there's no supreme law or government to administer that law equally over everyone. In 2011, this is a shorter clip, but notice what he said here, clip 10.
But everything breaks down if you have lawlessness. You take the law, you see, out of the Constitution. If you destroy the supreme law of the land, you have nothing but ugly, evil human nature to guide you.
And we're seeing that on display every day. Ugliness. Evil human nature is the guide. Everyone's doing what seems right. Everyone's saying what they think is right. In fact, it's just ugly, evil human nature. That's what's guiding us. And it is, Judges 21:25. It's leading to anarchy. It's leading to Zimbabwe, to Venezuela, and now, more recently, South Africa. We'll talk more about that here in the next segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
On Tuesday, South Africans, through their publicly elected representatives in Parliament, voted overwhelmingly in support of a motion to accelerate equitable land redistribution through expropriation of land without compensation.
That's a South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, following the vote on Tuesday in Parliament there in South Africa. Land redistribution, that's what they're calling it, this expropriation of land without compensation. In other words, taking land from white farmers. And they voted overwhelmingly in favor of this in the parliament. So this is majority rule, right? This is a tremendous victory for democracy. And this is what, of course, the elites want in the United States. They want an absolute democracy. It's not fair that Donald Trump is president when Hillary Clinton got the majority of votes. A constitutional republic is not fair. Well, a constitutional republic is what protects the rights of minorities. A constitutional republic, at least in the case of the United States, I mean, it's protected the minorities from a tyranny of the majority. And so we see that happening now in South Africa. The majority are in favor of seizing land from farmers because they're white. I mean, that's the dictionary definition of racism. Taking property from someone because of their skin color. I mean, you look at, going back to the first segment, the media and the charges. Right now it's impeach, impeach, impeach. Because he's a criminal, he's a criminal, he's a criminal. Not that long ago, it was other things. A lot of times it's racism. He's a racist. He's a white supremacist. He's persecuting minorities. He's persecuting Latinos. He's locking them up in cages. He has it in for blacks. All of these charges of racism, nonstop, that go on in the United States. And yet here in South Africa, you have it out in the open. It's on display. It's obvious. And it doesn't even get covered in the United States. They don't even care. I mean, if anything, like I said yesterday, Barack Obama goes down there a month ago and says, hey, this guy, this Ramaphosa, he's inspiring hope in this great country of his. He's inspired hope throughout the country. Well, I can't imagine the farmers are that hopeful. Another up-and-coming leader, Julius Malema, he heads up the rising EFF party. He's real popular among the young people in South Africa. Listen to what he had to say. His accent's pretty thick, but listen to what he has to say. This is from earlier this year, clip 8.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm saying to you, we have not called for the killing of white people, at least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Yeah, but, I mean, you'd understand somebody watching that, especially as it gets shared on Twitter, they freak out. It sounds like a genocidal call.
Cry babies. Cry babies.
I'm not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now.
I can't give you a guarantee of the future, especially when things are going the way they are.
Subtext.
Especially if things are going the way they are, there will be a revolution in this country, I can tell you now. There will be an alert revolution. An alert revolution is the highest form of anarchy.
He says if things continue the way that they are, there's going to be an unled revolution. In other words, just the highest form of anarchy. That's what he's predicting, some would say calling for. I can't guarantee. I mean, we're not calling for the killing of white people, not yet. And to criticize that, well, you're a crybaby. We're to praise them for these kinds of statements, for these kinds of positions. We're to praise them for seizing property, for legalizing the theft of private property. And people as high up as Barack Obama have happily done that. He's inspiring hope, Ramaphosa. He's inspiring hope in South Africa. It's astounding what's going on, where this world is headed. I mean, is this God's world? This is not God's world. This is Satan's world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Revelation 12 and verse 9. It's just not covered. I mean, in the research that we've done, not just from last night, but even in the last several months, there's just the one show, Tucker Carlson on Fox, that's at least been trying to draw attention to this story. And he did it again last night, and good for him. No one else is. No one else is talking about it. It's all about impeachment. Impeach, impeach, impeach. And then if they take a break from that for a moment, they've got to argue over whether or not it's important to discuss the story in Iowa, this girl that gets killed by an illegal immigrant. Should we cover it, or is that a distraction? After all, we have a criminal in the White House. That's the news coverage in the United States. No wonder. No wonder more and more people are looking for alternative news sources. They can't get the truth. It's like my father said. I mean, they themselves are deceived, and they've deceived so many people. Young people in particular. Well, you have the young people pushing for violence in South Africa. And then the ones that are being brought up in the United States, brought up to hate their own nation. You might have seen the bit, I think Joel Hilliker wrote on this. The governor of New York, who said that America's never been great. Well, as if right on cue, they took a microphone out to a university campus and got all of these young people. Well, what about you? Someone recently said America's never been great. Is that the case? I mean, what do you believe? And all of them, for the most part, except for one right at the end, all of them, I can't say it has been great. It certainly hasn't been great for all people. We have our problems. I mean, this is what they're being taught. This is what they go to university to hear. America's bad. America's evil. America has all these sins. And no wonder. No wonder we've descended to where we are. Every man for himself. Well, on that show last night, this was Tucker Carlson. I thought this was pretty amazing. He evidently, his people contacted the State Department. The State Department headed up by Mike Pompeo. Pretty conservative guy for the most part. And yet they contacted the State Department and asked about this situation in South Africa. And listen to how Tucker Carlson explained this last night on his program. This is clip two.
We called over to the State Department for comment on South Africa's land seizures, seizures which should be getting worldwide attention because they are immoral but are getting basically none. And the State Department replied with what is honestly an unbelievable statement. We're going to quote it for you at length. Here it is, quote, "We are aware of these reports and have been following this issue very closely for some time. South Africa is a strong democracy with resilient institutions, including a free press and an independent judiciary. South Africans are grappling with the difficult issue of land reform through an open process, including public hearings, broad-based consultations, and active civil society engagement. President Ramaphosa has pledged that the land reform process will follow the rule of law and its implementation will not adversely affect economic growth, agricultural production, or food security." End quote. State Department did not mention that by following the rule of law, he has changed the country's constitution to make it possible to steal land from people because they are the wrong skin color. In other words, nothing to see here, says Mike Pompeo's State Department. It's totally okay for South Africa to steal property for racist reasons because they are, quote, a strong democracy and held, quote, public hearings. Criminals take note. Find a buddy, start robbing State Department employees on their way to work. By their logic, as long as you outnumber them, they'll be okay with getting robbed because it's democracy.
That's right. Absolute democracy. Now, to be fair, I'm sure he didn't get the response direct from Mike Pompeo. But he got it from the State Department at the top level of the State Department. And all these things that we see going on right at the top level of the Department of Justice, of the FBI, I mean, it's embedded into their thinking. Look, South Africa's got a strong democracy. It's got a free press. I mean, they have an open process going on here. I mean, that's what Ramaphosa said himself. Look, a majority, a strong majority, an overwhelming majority voted for this. So it has to be good. If everybody thinks that way, it has to be good. And so we'll go in and we'll take the farms. We'll seize control of the private property. Someone else's property because he's white. And Tucker Carlson asked the State Department, "What do you think of this?" And that was their response. Now, President Trump tweeted out after that show saying that he had asked the Secretary of State, Pompeo, to look into the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. That was from President Trump's tweet. And so what do you suppose the reaction was to that tweet on social media? Well, President Trump, of course, he's the bad guy. Who does he think he is? Weighing in on South Africa. Mind your own business. Large-scale killing of farmers? And so Donald Trump, again, is the problem. He's the target. Not just in the United States. He's the target everywhere in the world, it seems. Carlson, on his show, he had this exchange with Marion Tupi. He works at the Cato Institute. He's a South African himself. But here are some of the comments that he had in this exchange, clip three.
In a free and civilized society, we don't take people's stuff on the basis of the color of their skin. It was wrong when it took place under apartheid. It is wrong now. And it would be a tragedy if South Africa were to repeat the same mistakes it did in the past.
So besides, I mean, Carlson goes on in response to that and says that, well, besides being racist, I mean, look at what it's done to nations like Zimbabwe. Look at what it's done. He talks about these two levels here in the next exchange, clip four.
So there are really two levels here. First is the moral level, and you and I are in agreement that it's always wrong to punish people for what they look like. But second is the effect that it will have. We saw something similar to this happen in neighboring Zimbabwe. What happened when land was seized there on the basis of skin color?
18 years ago, the governing party of Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF, was threatened with electoral loss. And in order to shore up its support amongst the electorate, it decided to expropriate the farmers of Zimbabwe. What that led to, aside from horrific violence, was a total economic collapse of the country. Half a century of economic growth was wiped out in Zimbabwe as a result of this particular policy. The country experienced hyperinflation and had to abandon its currency. The country's unemployment rate was roughly 90%. Life expectancy plummeted, child mortality increased, and of course the agricultural production has collapsed, and hunger ensued.
And yet history now is going to repeat itself if South Africa continues on with this course. And then there's the United States, the former president, the current State Department. Well, go on ahead. We support you. You're inspiring hope for your people. Go ahead and take the land. This is one final exchange on that Tucker Carlson segment last night, clip five.
Why would former President Barack Obama, just several weeks ago, publicly praise a racist like Cyril Ramaphosa? Why would he do that?
A lot of people hope that Cyril Ramaphosa is playing some sort of a three-dimensional chess, that he's just trying to appease the far left of his political party and the far left in the country. But ultimately, he doesn't really believe in what he explicitly says he believes. Cyril Ramaphosa has said that by expropriating the farmland, the privately owned farmland in South Africa, he's going to create the Garden of Eden in South Africa. He's going to turn South Africa into hell, just like Zimbabwe is a complete catastrophe.
So they do one thing, they take the land, they steal the land, and then just say, hey, this is democracy, it's good, and it's not going to turn violent. This is going to be a Garden of Eden. And then the ones that do even give the slightest bit of criticism will then qualify it by saying that, well, maybe he's just trying to please those on the far left of his party. What does he actually believe? What is he actually doing? I mean, he comes in promising, we're going to take the land away from the whites. And this is the leader that the majority wants. Here's the absolute democracy that so many on the radical left, that's what they desperately want for the United States. And then we hope. It's like that article I read from Richard Palmer the other day. We assume and hope that, well, everything's going to turn out great because we all want peace and everybody's going to get along. But yet, in case study after case study, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, like we covered the other day, when will we learn? No hope in man. Andrew Miller wrote a piece back in June, South Africa on the Verge of Civil War. And in that piece, he goes through some of the history, the whites on the farms, Ramaphosa, who came into power earlier this year, what he campaigned on. He goes through that Malema quote or that clip that I played for you. I'm not calling for the killing of whites yet, at least not at the moment. Andrew says in his article, this is from June, Malema misconstrues history in a bid to get over 2 million South Africans who voted for him in 2016 municipal elections to support Zimbabwe-style land grabs. That's where this is leading. Ramaphosa said yesterday that, well, that's not going to happen. But, I mean, when the government goes in and takes it, what's going to stop thugs from doing it? I mean, the government's giving them their endorsement. Andrew says, despite his claims that civil war is coming with or without him, Malema has played a major role in exacerbating racial tensions in South Africa. In 2011, he was tried by South Africa's Equality Court for singing a song that calls for the shooting of white farmers with machine guns. 5 years later, he was tried for encouraging his supporters to illegally occupy white-owned land. When we leave here, you see any beautiful piece of land? You like it? Occupy it, he told supporters. This is a leading politician in South Africa. If you want some land, well, go take it. What's the spirit behind this? Who's behind this? Last March, he told a crowd in Johannesburg, Andrew writes, that his party was cutting the throat of whiteness. Many of his supporters defend his remarks as metaphorical. Those who would like to literally slit the throats of white farmers may interpret Malema's statement differently. An estimated 3,000 farmers have been murdered since 1994. But don't bring that up. Certainly don't bring that up if you're Donald Trump. You mind your own business. You're the bad guy. You're the racist. You're the criminal. It's astounding. I mean, this world is off the rails. And Christ said that it would be. He said all of this is building to great tribulation. You see racial tension and hatred like you've never seen it. Because we've got a total breakdown of law and order. There is no government administering a law equally for the majority and minorities alike. And so what we're left with, well, there's a fine line, like I said the other day, between democratic socialism and authoritarian socialism. You've got that. And then you've got the tyranny of the majority. The absolute democracy. Well, there's something for everyone in this world. And more, we're just going in the direction of tyranny. Anarchy. That's the way it's prophesied to be in the lead up to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Just to conclude from Andrew's piece, even if South Africa's government does not begin confiscating white-owned land like Zimbabwe began doing in 2000 with disastrous results, the inflammatory rhetoric used by politicians like Malema is moving people to violence. I mean, that's what we wrote just back in June. And now here, South Africa already is moving. It's beginning this week, confiscating white-owned land. Just like Zimbabwe started doing 18 years ago. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program discussing what happened on this day. Well, I didn't do the math, but it was back in 1939. The Germany-Russian Pact, the so-called non-aggression pact. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
So it was on this day, 79 years ago, that Germany and the Soviet Union agreed to this Molotov-Ribbentrop non-aggression pact, a secret agreement to divide up Poland between themselves. And as we now know, that set the stage for the outbreak of World War II. It started a week later. And this was just one of a long line of secret arrangements between Germany and Russia. Richard Palmer had a program on that very subject a few weeks back when he subbed in for me, covering, just to review, a couple of them. The Reinsurance Treaty of 1887, this secret treaty between Russia and Germany, where if one country went to war, the other agreed to maintain this sort of benevolent neutrality. That was back in 1887. Following World War I, there was the Treaty of Rapallo. And this was basically Russia helping Germany to get around the Treaty of Versailles following World War I. To get around it. To help Germany violate a previous treaty with Western allies, or with the West. And so what are we to make of all of these arrangements, these trade deals, the Nord Stream 2 project, and who knows what else is going on, whatever else is going on behind closed doors? German foreign policy, as I said on Monday, it's talking about the German-Russian collusion on this natural gas pipeline. German-Russian collusion. I mean, this is the German-Russian collusion, or the collusion story we need to be worried about. You're not going to hear it discussed, though, in the United States. Not in the U.S. news cycle. Certainly not. George Friedman at Geopolitical Futures. He has the long dance, or discusses the long dance, between Germany and Russia, and all these meetings going on between Merkel and Putin. The most recent one, I think, just last Saturday night. But here is Friedman writing just today. He says, but the meeting comes at a time when both the Germans and Russians are redefining their place in the international system, which for them also means redefining their own relationship. I mean, these are dramatic changes. These are geopolitical earthquakes. And Friedman points out what we've been saying all along. He says, in the 20th century, shifts in the Russo-German relationship tended to have profound consequences in Europe, or for Europe. And so what does it mean this time around? Well, we want to watch and pray always, and we want to keep our eyes not only on prophecy and world events, but history as well. 79 years ago today, well, Friedman talks about some of the things that Richard's been pointing out, or right on top of, before this long history. All of these agreements, he goes back to 1871 and 1914 and 1939, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. And then he says here, this is George Friedman, in short, the history of Russo-German relations since Germany's unification in 1871 has consisted of tentative attempts at cooperation followed by catastrophic wars and near wars. Neither country has forgotten that, but the temptation to try again on the assumption that this time is different is powerful. I mean, let's try it again. Hopefully it'll turn out differently this time. It's like the same comedy of errors that you see now in South Africa. Well, let's try what Zimbabwe did, but this time it'll be different. I mean, we're not going to allow smash and grab. This is just government seizure we're talking about. This time it'll be different. We get the socialist authoritarian in there. Back whenever it was, when Hugo Chavez came on board in Venezuela. And this time it'll be different. All of these programs. And I'm going to go ahead and grab hold of power. I've got to stay in power. I mean, this is who the people wanted. This is the way that the world is going. I mean, we haven't learned the lessons of history. We're making the same mistakes over and again. Friedman concludes here, in that case, this looks like 1939, when the two sides signed a pact that they knew the other would betray, with the exception that they would betray first, when the time was right. Well, I'm not so sure about that from, at least from Stalin's side. I mean, I think he there's quite a few historians that say he believed that pact would hold. I mean, he was shocked when just 2 years later, less than 2 years, Hitler's marching on Russia, and he was in a state of denial. He couldn't believe it. I mean, Friedman knows more about history than I do. Maybe he's looking at it from a bigger picture or something. In any event, a lot of times they go into these agreements knowing that they're not going to last for that long, but thinking that's okay because I'll betray Germany, or Germany thinks I'll betray Russia first, and I'll come out victorious. He says, an alliance of those thinking themselves more clever than the other doesn't usually end well. That's George Friedman giving us a helpful history lesson. That's what some of the news programs should be discussing. Well, we've been discussing this for decades. As I said, Richard lately, he's been all over it. My father had the July 26th Key of David program. Germany and Russia's secret war against the United States, or against America. And we've referred you back to the May 1962 Plain Truth, our predecessor, the Trumpet's predecessor. The Plain Truth wrote, once a German-dominated Europe is fully established, Germany will be ready to negotiate and bargain with Russia and behind the backs of the Western allies if necessary. That is an astounding quote from 1962. Once a German-dominated Europe is fully established, Germany will be ready to negotiate and bargain with Russia. That's what we're seeing happen. I mean, Germany's long been the dominant power in Europe. I mean, that's clear for all to see. But now you see the next phase. Now you see Germany negotiating and bargaining with Russia, and at the expense of the United States. Just as that same article brought out, it says, when a Russo-German deal is made, you can be sure that the doom of the United States and Great Britain is on the horizon. Another important history lesson. Wow. 79 years ago today, remember, God says throughout the Bible, remember your own history. Remember your spiritual history. Remember this history. It's a warning. It should be. Well, here again, that recent Key of David, the recent Trumpet article to go with it, Germany and Russia's secret war against America. Richard Palmer's recent article, the Russian alliance that you really have to worry about. All of these deceived journalists looking for Russian collusion with the Trump administration. And here is the real collusion that should concern all of us. Richard wrote in that piece, this was from last year actually, April of 2017, that this Russian-German alliance, it's only going to last as long as it's in the interests of both parties. It's like Friedman said. And they know it won't last, but well, worst comes to worst, I can betray them first. He quotes my father, look at history. Every time competition between Germany and Russia heats up, they form a deal with one another just before going to war. And so it's important that we understand what's actually happening in Europe. What's actually happening between Germany and Russia? I mentioned this quote, I believe, on Monday's show. My father's article, that secret war article. Do you see the stage being set for a world war like never before? Do you understand it? He says God spells it out for us, and we can see events lining up with his prophecies, and anyone who sees it and heeds the warning and obeys God can be protected and lead a happy, stable, and fulfilled life. That's from my father's recent article, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America. That's in the latest Trumpet, the September issue of the Trumpet magazine. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.